welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, horror, later on, an episode of The Weird Circle from 1944. But first, it's The Sealed Book, with a story called Devil Island, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from April 4th, 1945.
The Sealed Book!
Once again, the keeper of the book is ready to open the ponderous volume in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. All the strange and mystifying stories of the past, the present, and the future. Keeper of the book, what tale will you tell us this time?
What tale shall I tell you? I have here tales of every kind. Tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds and events strange beyond all belief. Let me see. Yes, here's a tale for you. The story of a small and desolate island off the coast of New England and the people who lived on it. The title of the tale is Devil Island. Here is the tale as it was told by Anne Drake and is written in the sealed book. It all began on that bleak
autumn day when I hired a motorboat to take me out to the island, Devil Island. The bleak-looking island which lay ahead and belonged to the Drake family for 200 years was to be my new home. I kept staring at it, wondering what it would be like to live on this island with my father, whom I'd never seen. 20 minutes later, the boatman had landed me at the dock and left. Towering above me was a high cliff, and on top of it was the house, a huge stone mansion that looked as old and weather-beaten as a medieval castle. I climbed the steep, rocky path that led from the dock to the house. Hello.
Don't tell me. Anne, I've recognized you anyplace. You look exactly like your mother.
Are you my father?
Yes. Are you disappointed?
Oh, no. No, of course not.
Come into the drawing room. Your stepmother and uncle are waiting to meet you. Hester, Henry.
Anne.
I want you to meet my daughter, Anne.
Anne, this is a great pleasure.
Thank you, Uncle Henry.
Anne, I'm your stepmother, and I can't tell you how happy I am to have you here. Won't you call me Hester?
Thank you. I'd like to.
Oh, Hester. And let me introduce you to the remaining member of the household, Anne. This is Abel. He served the family for 30 years. He can't talk, but he understands what you're saying. Oh. Abel, this is my daughter.
Hello, Abel.
Oh, Anne, it's going to be wonderful having you here. You're just what Drake Manor needs to make it live again. I do hope we'll be able to make you happy here.
The weeks slipped by, and I was happy. I spent the days reading with Father and taking long walks with Uncle Henry and being taught cooking by Hester. And at night, Uncle Henry and I would play chess.
Well, that's another game for you, Anne. The trouble is, I taught you how to play the game too well.
It looks as though another northeaster is on its way.
Yes, it does.
Would you like me to draw the curtains, Uncle Henry?
If you will, Anne. That window over there seems to be... He's there, looking in at me.
Who, Uncle Henry? There's no one at the window.
Can't you see him? He's beckoning to me.
But there's no one there. Here, I'll draw the curtains. Is that better?
He can't see me now. But he's still out there, waiting for me.
Who is?
Your uncle, Richard.
Uncle Richard? But he's been dead for 15 years.
Yes, I know. And now he's come for me.
No, Uncle Henry, you only imagined you saw him.
Perhaps the same thing is happening to me that happened to the others.
What happened to the others?
Your grandfather, Daniel, Aunt Harriet, Uncle Richard. They all died insane.
Oh. Oh, no. No, it can't be.
They did, Anne. There's a strain of insanity in the Drake family. Aunt Harriet, for weeks before she died, kept screaming that Grandfather Daniel was trying to pull her into the grave.
Oh.
And Uncle Richard, he died crying out that Aunt Harriet was at the window calling
him. Oh, no, no.
They all died during a storm like this one. And now my time has come. Richard is waiting for me. I'll be the next of the Drakes to die.
Please, Uncle Henry, you mustn't say things like that.
Oh, Anne, I'm so afraid of insanity, of dying.
Uncle Henry, I'll spend all of my time with you now. We'll end this nightmare you're living in.
The only end to it will be death.
Uncle Henry never spoke of his terrible fear again. But in the weeks that followed, he grew haggard, became frightened at the sound of a door opening. Then one day, another northeaster set in. By nightfall, it had whipped itself into a gale. At midnight, I woke suddenly to hear Uncle Henry speaking to someone in his room.
Richard, stop tapping on my window. Go away, do you hear? Why can't you leave me alone? I don't want to go with you. No. Not yet.
I quickly opened
please,
my door.
Please,
I stepped into the hall.
No, don't take me now.
Uncle Henry's voice grew wilder and wilder as I approached his room.
Why don't you go away? You're dead. Dead. You have no right to bother the living.
Uncle Henry,
no.
Let me in.
No.
It's Anne.
No.
Uncle Henry,
oh,
please unlock
go.
The door.
I won't go with you, Richard. My time hasn't come yet. No, I won't. You can't make me.
Uncle Henry.
Why are you raising my window? No, Richard. Don't come in! Stay away from me!
Uncle Henry! Uncle Henry!
Anne, what is it? What's wrong?
Oh, Father, do something. It's Uncle Henry. He was screaming and now he...
Come here, dear. Hush, now, hush.
No. The door's locked. I'll have to break it down. Yes. Yes, Anne. He's dead.
Here in the island burying grounds of six generations of Drakes, we place the remains of our beloved brother and uncle, Henry Drake, secure in the knowledge that in thy arms he shall find everlasting.
Ah, dear. Life in this house won't be the same without Henry.
Father, Uncle Henry was terribly frightened for weeks before he died.
Anne, whatever are you talking about?
It all began during that northeaster we had last month. Uncle Henry and I were playing chess.
But, Anne, why didn't Henry tell me about those hallucinations he was having?
He didn't want to worry you. Father, did Aunt Harriet, Uncle Richard, and your father die insane?
Oh, Anne, Henry should never have told you about them. Promise me you won't worry about our hereditary trouble.
I'll try not to, Father.
We've lost Henry, but the three of us will go on as before.
The three of us tried to go on as before, but an unspoken fear had crept into our lives. Often I turned to find Father and Hester watching me anxiously. Then a month after Uncle Henry's death, another storm lashed the island.
I'll be glad when this storm blows over. It's getting on my nerves.
Father, why don't we close up Drake Manor for a few weeks and take a vacation on the mainland?
You mean leave the island?
Yes. No, that's impossible, Anne. We have enough money to get along on the island, but not elsewhere.
But I have all that money. My mother left me. We could use that.
You won't receive that money until you're 21. That's 6 months from now. Besides...
Oh, Anne, Well, what are you staring at?
Look. Look at the window.
Eh?
It's Uncle Henry. He's beckoning to me.
Anne, there's no one at the window.
He's there, I tell you, he's there. Look. Now he's gone away. Oh, you saw him, didn't you? You must have.
Darling, you only imagined you saw him.
Oh, no, no, I did see him. He was beckoning to me, the way Uncle Richard beckoned to him. Means I'm going to be the next Drake to die.
Anne, what are you saying?
Oh, you mustn't talk like that. You just imagined you saw Uncle Henry. It was just an
hallucination. And I'm going insane, as he did.
Oh, no, no, don't say that. Anne, you must rid your mind of all these fears, of everything Henry told you. Promise me you won't think about it anymore.
But that was a promise I couldn't keep. At night I'd lie in the darkness in my room, thinking of everything that had happened, listening to the night noises. And one night I heard footsteps above me in the tower. That limp. Oh, that unmistakable limp. It was Uncle Henry in the tower. There was an icy coldness about the house as I climbed the steps to the tower. I opened the door. The tower was in complete darkness. But by a window, his face ghost-like in the moonlight, stood Uncle Henry.
Come to take you with me, Anne. Your time has come. The grave will wait no longer.
No. No.
Do not be afraid. Your death is not a thing to be feared, but to be welcomed.
No. No, stay away from me.
I cannot return to the grave without you. Give me your hand.
No. No. No!
And now for the rest of the story, Devil Island, as it is written in the sealed book. Martin Drake, hearing Anne's screams, rushed up to the tower of the old mansion to find her lying unconscious on the floor. After Martin and Hester had taken the girl back to her bed, Martin went to the mainland. At dawn, he returned with a doctor and waited impatiently for him to finish examining Anne.
I've just given her a sedative, Mr. Drake. She's asleep now.
Will she be all right, Doctor?
Afraid she's on the borderline of insanity.
Oh, no.
And I'm afraid in a case of this type, where there is inherited insanity, there's very little that can be done.
Well, sleepyhead, it's about time you were waking up.
Oh, hello, Father. How long have I been asleep?
A little over 10 hours. It's just getting dark outside.
Is the doctor still here?
No, Anne. He left hours ago.
And, darling, he says you're going to get well.
Why, of course you are. Now you'd better get some more rest. Good night, darling.
A moment later, they were gone. I was alone again. Alone in the dark. And all I could think of was, I was going insane. Perhaps I was already mad. The hours passed. The very stillness of the house made my heart pound in my ears. And then the stillness was broken. That limp again. It was Uncle Henry in the tower. Back and forth from one end of the tower to the other, he limped. Then silence. I lay in the darkness waiting. And then suddenly, the door to my room was opened. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. Oh, Abel. Oh, Abel, what are you doing in my room? What are you trying to tell me? I don't understand. Oh, he's walking again. Abel, you hear him, don't you? You do hear it. I told them that Uncle Henry had come back from the grave, but they said I was just imagining it. You mean no? He hasn't come back from the grave? But if he hasn't come back from the grave and you hear what I hear, you... Abel, you don't mean that he's still alive. But that can't be true. You buried him yourself. I saw you. You mean you didn't bury him? That he wasn't in the coffin? Oh, but you must be wrong. Oh, when we broke into his room, Father found him. No, what? What do you mean, no? Are you trying to tell me something about Father? You are. What do you mean, Father, no? Father, no. You mean he isn't my father? Oh, but you must be wrong. Oh, of course he is. That doesn't make sense. Why should he say he is my father if he isn't? What does he gain by it? My mother's estate. Oh, no, you must be wrong. Even if I were to die, he wouldn't get it. The estate would then go to charity. It's in mother's will. Oh, why does he keep walking in the tower? He's driving me crazy. You mean they want to drive me crazy? Oh, but why? What reason could they have? Oh, if I were to become insane, he could have himself appointed my guardian, take over the estate. Is that it? It is. But Abel, if he isn't my father, where is my father? Is he dead? You mean he is dead? Then who are these three who say they're my father and stepmother and uncle? I don't understand, but no matter who they are, they'll kill me. They'll kill both of us if they learn we've discovered their secret. Oh, but we've got to escape. But how? The only boat is locked, and he has the key. Why are you handing me that flashlight? You mean the window? Signal the mainland for help. Yes, of course. Abel, you better go. We can't let them find you in here or they'll suspect. I'll keep signaling as long as the batteries last. Oh, I can't keep signaling much longer. But now, Professor...
Andy, what are you doing out of bed? And with that flashlight?
Nothing at all.
You weren't signaling someone on the mainland, were you?
Oh, no. No, I just had the flashlight in case someone came in the room.
Oh, why, you're trembling as though you were frightened. You're not afraid of your own father, are you, dear?
No, of course not.
Now, no more walking around. I want you to get some sleep. Good night, dear.
Was gone, taking the flashlight with him. Did he suspect that I knew? Oh, the hours seemed endless until the first rays of dawn came. Would rescue come with it, or had my signals gone unnoticed? After I dressed, I went to the window, and then I saw it. A strange launch tied up at the dock. Suddenly frightened lest the callers leave before I could speak to them, I rushed out of the room. As I ran down the stairs, I could hear voices in the drawing room.
Well, Sheriff, if Dr. Arnold has spoken to you about my daughter's mental condition, I'm quite sure you'll understand.
Sheriff, don't listen to him. He isn't my father.
Anne!
What was that, miss?
I tell you, he's not my father. He's an imposter, and so is she.
Oh, Martin, she's having another one of her spells.
Now, please, Hester.
They're acting, I tell you. The moment I set foot on the island, they began their plan to drive me insane. First, they gained my love and trust. Then they had Uncle Henry confide to me his fears. And when Uncle Henry was found dead, they told me...
Who says I'm dead? I've never felt better.
Oh, Sheriff, allow me to introduce my brother, Henry.
Well, Miss Drake, your Uncle Henry doesn't look very dead.
He wasn't. They just pretended he was. They even buried an empty coffin to make me think I was attending his funeral.
I really think you should take Anne up to her room, Hester. She needs rest.
Oh, Sheriff, they're lying, the three of them.
Have you any proof, Miss Drake?
Yes. Yes, Abel will tell you. He knows.
I'm afraid that Abel can't tell you anything, dear. The poor chap fell off Devil's Cliff into the sea early this morning.
Oh, you pushed him off the cliff so that he couldn't talk.
Martin, the excitement's too much. Oh. She's getting worse.
Sorry to trouble you, Mr. Drake, but it was my duty to investigate those signals.
Oh, Sheriff, you can't leave me here or they will drive me insane.
I assure you, Sheriff, she'll be given the very best of care. We have a specialist coming to see her next week.
Oh, no, Sheriff, wait. Wait, please.
Now, Miss Drake, I think you'd better stop.
No, 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 wait. I just want to show you this gold locket. Look. Look, I'll open it. Do you see what's inscribed in it?
Yes. For my daughter, in commemoration of her 5th birthday. What are you driving at, Miss Drake?
If that man's my father, as he claims he is, ask him what my middle name is. It's inscribed in the locket.
Well, just to humor her, Mr. Drake, what is her middle name?
Her middle name? Well, frankly, Sheriff, I seem to have forgotten.
Oh, he hasn't forgotten it, Sheriff. He never knew it. He isn't my father.
Kind of strange you're not knowing your own daughter's middle name.
Well, it's just that, I have an awful memory for names.
So have I, but I know my kid's middle name. There's something peculiar about all this. I think you three and the girl better come with me to the mainland.
What for?
So I can do a little checking. If you're Martin Drake, as you say you are, there must be someone on the mainland who can identify you.
Now, see here, Sheriff, this is ridiculous. Just because...
I said you're going to the mainland with me.
Well, I always said you were the weak link in the chain, Gerald.
Shut up, you fool.
It's no use, Gerald. The game is up. The trip to the mainland is more than we can stand. You just have to look at Hester's face to see that she agrees.
Who are you folks?
We're actors. Things having become difficult a few years ago, we accepted employment on this island from Mr. Drake. When he died, I thought of this little scheme. It really was a perfect plan until this fool slipped up on the girl's middle name. By the way, what is her middle name?
Why, according to this locket, she hasn't one. It's just inscribed to Anne.
And that is the story of Devil Island, as it is written in the sealed book. Because an imposter slipped up on a middle name that didn't exist, an almost perfect crime was prevented by Sheriff Williams, and an innocent girl was rescued from imprisonment and probable death. It was a small slip, but a fatal one. But the sound of the great gong tells me I must close the sealed book once again.
One moment, keeper of the book. What story will you tell us next time?
Next time? Are you sure you want to know? Perhaps my next story may be about you. For I have here all the stories that ever happened, and many that have yet to come to pass. But I'll find one for you in just a moment.
And now, keeper of the book, have you found the story that you'll tell next week?
Yes, yes, I have found one. It's the story of two helpless old ladies in fear of their lives and the desperate measures to which they were driven in order to save themselves. The title of the tale is Escape by Death.
Thank you. Be sure and be with us again next time when the great gong heralds another strange and exciting story from
The Sealed Book.
The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
The Sealed Book, on Tuned to Yesterday from the Mutual Broadcasting System, first heard on April 8, 1945. You are listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for The Weird Circle, with a story adapted from the work of Guy de Maupassant called The Rope of Hair, which is based on one of his 300 short stories he wrote in the 1880s called A Tress of Hair. This episode first released in syndication in 1944.
In this cave, by the restless sea, we are met to call from out the past stories strange and weird. Bellkeeper, pull the bell, so all may know we are gathered again in the Weird Circle. Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale, The Rope of Hair.
I am often puzzled by the three processes, love, hate, and death, which perhaps more than the others influences our minds. I have learned but little more of them in my life. Perhaps the words and secrets of the three were in the diary in the old chateau. I have never known that. But I have learned fear. I have become afraid of the night. It was long ago when I was in garrison at Rouen. I was walking one evening along the quay when I observed a man who looked up at me from thoughtful contemplation of the slowly moving water. I hesitated, surprised at something, some recognition in his eyes.
Victor.
Yes?
Victor, don't you know me?
Why, Jacques, can it be you, Jacques Lafontaine?
Yes, Victor, of course.
Well, Jacques, I can't believe it's really you.
Then even my oldest friend doesn't know me.
But it's been so long, Jacques, so long since our last meeting. It's 5 years since Jean Duroc's ball.
It's changed me, then.
Well, at first I didn't recognize you, but in 5 years...
In 5 years, most people don't grow gray and stoop, do they, Victor?
It depends.
Say it, man. Go ahead and say it. You think I'd let myself go. You even think I was ready to jump off the quay.
Well, were you?
You've always been like that, Victor. Calm and easy. But no. In fact, unbelievable as it may seem, I was wondering where you were.
You must have known I was stationed here.
Yes, everyone knows where the distinguished captain, the Marquis de La Tour Samuel, can be found. But, you see, Victor, I hated the thought of coming to you like this.
But as officers, we must soon have had business together anyway.
Then you haven't even heard that...
Heard what?
That I had resigned my commission, left the glory of our country in the hands of the dashing...
You had a fine career ahead of you. Your position, your influence, they pointed to everything ahead.
And now perhaps everything is behind. Is that it, Victor?
Oh, life is never as bitter as that. For men as young as we, a great deal lies ahead.
For a man who has written his own destiny in one moment? No.
What's happened, Jacques? Can't you tell me? Perhaps supper, a little entertainment. The city will be lively tonight. It'll do you good to forget your troubles.
Thank you, Victor, but we've been walking toward my rooming house. I hoped you might dine with me. We can talk quietly there.
Because we're old friends, yes. For anyone else, though, well, the evening is young and there are other things to do in the city.
Just this one evening. Can't you, Victor?
If that's what you want, Jacques, my time is yours.
Good. Here. This is the place, here.
This?
I know it's not a good section of the city. The place is run down, but it's comfortable. And with your soldiers quartered here, it was hard to find any place to stay at all. on in.
Let me follow you, Jacques. It's so dark in here, I can't see where to go.
I'll get some candles. There. Now, come on up this way. My room is right here at the top of the stairs. This door.
Well, go on, open it. What's the matter?
Shh.
What is it, Jacques?
I don't know.
Here, let me have the candle. It'll shake out of your hand. Now what's happened?
There's something. Somebody in there.
Well, open the door and find out.
Perhaps we've got enough.
If there's somebody in your room, we'll find out who it is.
No, Victor, please. Well, please, Victor. What's frightening you so?
Oh, good evening, monsieur.
Oh, Mrs. Dupré.
Yes, monsieur, did I startle you? You see, it was time for supper, so I brought it up to you, monsieur. I lit the candles in your room. I know
yes.
that you...
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Dupré, and bring another, please. The captain's dining with me.
But certainly, monsieur. Immediately, monsieur.
Come in. Come in, Victor. We'll wait just a few minutes until she comes back.
I think your Mrs. Dupré was as frightened as you were. Do you always frighten each other?
No. No, it was just that I didn't expect...
Jacques, seriously, what's on your mind? Certainly you aren't living in this place from choice. It's so near your own chateau. Why aren't you there?
That's what I wanted to talk to you about, Victor.
Well, if it's money, Jacques, why say so? You know you needn't go through all this. I'll gladly...
It's more than money.
Well, then, love?
Love, Victor? In the circle of things, where does hate end and love begin? Can you answer that?
Did you want me to come up here to talk riddles, Jacques?
Well, it was love, Victor. The most beautiful woman in the world.
Well, come on, out with it. Don't just sit there picking at the front of your tunic as though you were covered with dog hairs. What's this all about?
What?
Ever since we sat down, you've been pulling imaginary hairs out of your jacket there. Can't you sit still for a minute and relax?
Oh, was I? Oh, I'm sorry, Victor, but you see, I'm going to ask a favor of you that I'd hate to ask anyone else.
Anything you say, Jacques.
You see, several years ago, right after you last saw me, I was married to the most beautiful woman in the world. Oh, life was a sweet thing. We were the happiest couple in France.
And what happened?
She died, Victor. She died, and now she's dead and rotting in a grave. That's what death does to people, isn't it, Victor? She died just 1 year after I'd married her. Just 1 year of terrible happiness. Terrible because I guess no man has a right to so much. Well, on the day she died, I locked the door to our room, left the chateau, and as you see, Victor, I can never make myself go back.
And you want something?
Would you do it? Would you go back to our room there, Victor?
What do you want me to do?
In the right-hand drawer of the desk in our room, there is a book. A diary, which right now can mean more to me than anything else in the world. You'll know it because on it, it's marked with my crest across the front. Will you go?
I'll go tomorrow. I'll be free then.
I'll wait here until you come back with it. Oh, Victor!
Your supper, monsieur.
Oh.
I've brought it up as quickly as I could. Will that be all right, monsieur? You see the...
Just put it on the table, Mrs. Dupré. Thank you.
There, monsieur. I hope you enjoy it, monsieur.
Victor, sit down there. I'll write a note to the caretaker at the chateau and get you the keys to the room and to the desk.
Hasn't he the keys?
No one has a key to that room but me.
Why, Jacques? Is it haunted?
No.
Oh, come, Jacques. Your nerves are all on edge. Let's go out. There's a little place.
No, thank you, Victor. I'll stay here until tomorrow. Tomorrow, when you come back with the diary.
I left him then, sunk into that attitude of deep concentration I had noticed as he stared into the dark waters of the Seine. For a while, I forgot Jacques. The strange depression and fear that marked his attitude had shocked me. The way he sat, almost afraid to speak, plucking those imaginary hairs from the front of his tunic like a weak, frightened child. Not like the stalwart, ambitious young man I had known as a companion in boyhood, A young man, if ever there was one, destined to become the pride of his regiment. In the morning, my ride across the fields and through the cool summer woods somehow filled me with an intoxicating happiness. I took with me for a companion a Lieutenant Laroque, a friend of mine from the regiment, and I was thankful later for his sensible company. But in the exhilaration of the moment, I almost forgot the gloomy implications of my trip.
There's that old chateau, Captain. Have you noticed it before?
That's where we're going. To that place?
Yes, I have an errand there.
You know the place, then?
Well, I've passed by it several times. Never stopped. I thought it was deserted until the other day when I saw an old man standing by the gate.
Caretaker, isn't he?
I guess so. He threw stones at one of my soldiers who tried to stop for water. Chased him away before he could get inside the gates. I almost had to have the man thrown in jail to calm the soldier's feelings.
Well, he's not on guard today.
He's not at work either. Look at the condition of this place. Why, the gate's practically rusted off its hinges.
I can remember when this lawn was as smooth as velvet, and every path was well kept. But it's not my worry. Oh, where is this confounded caretaker anyway?
I'll see, Captain. Hey there!
No sign of life? I'll join you.
Is anybody here?
Try another door, Laroque.
Yes, sir. I'll try this one around the side.
Well?
You the caretaker?
Yes, I am Pierre. What is it you want?
I have a letter here.
Well, there's no one here. Can't you see that? This place is deserted.
The letter is for you.
Well, then give it here.
See here, you. Take off your hat when you're addressing an officer.
Never mind, Laroque. Let him read the letter. I'm anxious to get this over. Military dignity doesn't have much place here.
What's that? Well, it once did. This was the proudest house in Normandy.
Never mind, Pierre. Read the letter.
Well, I have read it.
Well?
Well, what do you want?
You ought to know. Your master's orders are there. I want to enter the chateau.
Are you going into his room?
Are you trying to put me through an examination?
But, I'll go and see if it is prepared, if it is all right.
That won't be necessary.
But it has not been entered since the death. I'd better see you.
But you see, Pierre, I have the key and you have not. Now step back. Let us go through.
Yes, Captain. Right through my kitchen there. That door enters the main hall.
Come on, Ross.
Coming, sir.
This door, Pierre?
Yes, Captain. Through there and up the stairs.
Oh, look, Captain. Look at the size of this hall.
Yes, Laroque. And look at the dust. Must be half an inch thick on that table.
You know, it must have been magnificent here once.
I knew it well when it was. Here, the stairs are over here. Let's go up. Somehow I don't like the place so much now.
Oh. The old man has shut the door down there. I don't think he likes us very much.
We're just invading his privacy, that's all. Anybody would be strange stuck in this place.
Well, I certainly wouldn't like it.
This is the door, I think.
Why, the air hasn't been changed in here for years.
What's that? Smells like a tomb.
It's dark enough to be one. I'll open that shutter over there. Oh, it's stuck, Captain.
Never mind. My eyes are getting used to the dim light now, anyway.
Yes, so are mine now. Look at this room. Somebody must have had a fight in here. The furniture's all out of place.
Stop imagining things, Laroque. I don't like this at all. Let's not add anything to this by digging into a man's private past.
Captain, didn't you say you had the only key to this room?
Yes, I have. Why?
Look at the bed.
Why?
The pillow's still pressed down. Somebody's been lying on it.
And lying very still. Look there. You can almost see the form of the body pressed into the covers.
Almost like a corpse.
Almost like a corpse. Yes, it was almost as though a corpse had lain there. But all at once, the ridiculous aspect of the situation brought me back to my senses.
Laroque?
Yes, Captain.
You'd better go stand guard outside the door so that our real menace, the caretaker, doesn't come up and interrupt us. I'll get the diary I'm after, and we'll get out of here.
Very well, Captain. I'll shut the door so you won't be disturbed.
I was trying to sound brave. There are times when the uniform of a captain forces courage. But I did feel better with Laroque guarding the door. A draft from the still-shuttered window was beginning to freshen the atmosphere. I opened the drawer of the desk and began fumbling among the litter of papers there. I found the diary, just as Jacques said I would, in a plain packet with his crest on the face of it, a crest that had been the bravest in France. The breeze from the window stirred the hangings behind me, but engrossed as I was in finding the diary, I paid but little attention to the stirring in the room.
Yes, there it is. You have really come for it. But you are not Jacques. I shall try to remember. He should have come. Not you. No. You are not Jacques. But you will do as well.
For endless time, I say, we faced each other there. But only for a moment, really. The woman seated herself in a chair. Her white garment made no sound as she put her hand to her head. She tried to stroke the long black hair that hung almost to the floor. It was black, but with a blackness that has no light, no life. In her other hand, she had a comb. She held it toward me.
Monsieur, you can do me a great service. I am suffering. Oh, I am suffering so. They will not comb my hair. You will comb my hair. You will comb my hair. Oh, I am suffering.
I took the comb from her hand and lifted that long hair. That hair which gave my skin a feeling of awful cold. A feeling of handling snakes. Cold. Cold and dead. The feeling still clings about my fingers. I handled that icy hair. I twisted it. I braided it. I bound it and unbound it. And while I let that horrible mane run through my fingers, she sighed and, trance-like, began to talk, forgetting, perhaps, that I was not Jacques.
Ah, that's better. The mirror is gone now. The mirror in which I watched you so many times combing my hair. And with what adoration in your eyes. Your brave, strong fingers playing there in the hair of a weak woman. So brave, so strong. Jacques loves me. Jacques loves me. That was the song that my heart sang when first we were here like this. I love Jacques. I love Jacques. That was the song I thought was echoed back. Pride and strength and killing. Yes, I saw you kill, Jacques. Once I saw you kill for power. Power, strength, pride. Being a soldier, being strong. They were your idols. What does a weak woman want of those things? When you brought me here, Jacques, my head was high. My pulses beat with joy at the peace and happiness I expected. But you'd always been strong, Jacques. Always strong and brutal with the strength you adored. Then when I saw you kill Jacques, I knew that the fascination of hate was my love. Hatred of you, of whom I need fear nothing because you loved me. Hate, not love. I was fascinated too, Jacques, when I wrote these things. Wrote them in that diary you're taking. Wrote of my hatred and my growing fear of you. Then that day, I watched you in the mirror as you braided my hair. Braided it into a strong rope. And because I'd written that I hated you, slip it slowly, so slowly and calmly, over my head and around my neck.
But you will never do it again, will you, Jacques? Because now, Jacques, you're going to comb it free again. Comb it free when I come to you for that diary. Yes, Jacques is going to comb it free again. I shall come for the diary, Jacques.
Laroque! Laroque!
What is it, Captain?
This closet door. That woman went in there. For the love of heaven, open it quickly.
But, Captain, it's locked, bolted outside here.
Can't be. She went in there.
Who?
That woman who was here.
Well, no one came in here, sir. Perhaps it was a shadow.
No, Captain. No, Laroque. I saw her. I heard... Can I be mad?
I'll break that shutter, Captain. We'll have some light.
And the closet door was bolted. In the light that flooded the room, I began to feel foolish. There was no sign, no indication, except for an overturned chair, that I had not been alone the whole time. With more calmness than I felt, we descended the great stair, crossed the huge dusty hall, and were at last out in the fresh air. We did not see Pierre again when we left the chateau. We drew rein before my lodgings. The groom took our horses.
Well, sir, the ride has been very pleasant. But, Captain, do you feel all right?
Laroque, I'm going up to my room. I need a rest. Will you deliver this diary to my friend? Here's the address. Tell him anything you like. Tell him I'm ill, sunstroke, anything at all. I'll see him later.
Of course, Captain. Just a moment, sir.
What is it? Why are you looking at the front of my coat like that?
Why, those hairs.
Hairs?
Yes, Captain. All twisted in the buttons. They're long and black like a woman's.
Yes. There were the same dead long hairs twisted in the buttons of my jacket. I pulled at them, every nerve in my body revolting at the cold feeling. Slowly, one by one, I pulled them off, dropping them from my fingers like poison things.
Can I help you, Captain?
Could he help me? No, but there was another he could help. I remembered how Jacques had sat, like a bashful child, pulling at the imaginary hairs in the front of his coat, begging me to get that diary to him. No, Laroque. But take this diary to my friend quickly. Quickly, Laroque.
Yes, sir.
It was better in my room. Somehow I could think there. But Jacques, his fear and his worry haunted me. A few hairs still clung to my jacket. Absently, I pulled them out and dropped them from the window, every nerve in my body revolting at their cold feeling. Then, with a sudden resolve, I went into the street again and headed toward Jacques' lodgings. I knew that I had to talk to him about what had happened. I hurried across the city. Laroque came toward me a few steps from Jacques' house.
Captain...
Have you delivered the diary already, Laroque?
I left it in his room, Captain. The gentleman wasn't at home.
Not there? He promised to wait until I got back.
The room was empty. The concierge had not seen him go out, Captain, but she had been in the basement, and he might have slipped out without her seeing him.
Very well, Laroque. I'll go and see you.
Do you wish me to come, sir?
No. You go on. I'll wait for him to come back.
Very well. It's that house right there, sir.
That house right there. That house right there. As though I wouldn't know that dirty doorway, those warped steps. Every detail of the last 24 hours seemed to have fixed itself like an etching in my brain.
Yes, monsieur?
I must see Monsieur Jacques. Monsieur Jacques.
But he's not in, monsieur. There was another gentleman just a few minutes ago.
He must be here. Let me in.
But, monsieur...
He must be.
Monsieur, I tell you that he's...
This is his door, isn't it?
He's not in, monsieur.
We'll see about that. Jacques, be quiet. Stand there.
He's dead. Oh, monsieur, he's dead. In my house.
His hand is cold. Is there a doctor near here?
Yes, monsieur. I'll call him.
Jacques was sitting huddled in a chair, a surprised look on his face. But he was white. White and somehow shriveled. I looked around for the diary which Laroque had delivered, but it was not to be seen. Some touch of the fear I had felt in facing the woman at Jacques' chateau chilled me again. After only a moment, I heard voices outside in the passageway.
It is here, monsieur. Right. A gentleman came and we found him so.
All right, then take me in there.
It doesn't seem it could be possible. It was only a few minutes ago and I saw with my own eyes that Monsieur Jacques was not in his room. It could not be.
Be quiet, please.
It isn't possible.
Quiet, please. Pardon, monsieur. What has happened here?
I don't know anything more than she has told you. We came in and found him this way, in the chair.
Let's see. His pulse? Yes, he's dead, no doubt of that. His hand is cold already.
But there was no way in which...
The man must have led an active life. He was not very old, and yet...
The doctor leaned, peering over Jacques' body. His hand reached out slowly toward the front of the coat. He plucked at one of the buttons.
Here. What do you suppose this is? Why, it's a hair. Long, black hair. And there are more of them. Almost as though he had been combing a woman's hair when he died.
Look, monsieur. Still more of them. Around his neck.
I watched the doctor with his thumb and forefinger hold the hair before his curiously staring eyes. I knew then that it had been no shadow I had seen at the chateau. I had heard the threatening words, and she had come for the diary at last.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you the story, The Rope of Hair. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
The Weird Circle, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated episode from 1944. And so closes this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for tuning in.